Blog Talk Radio.
Good to see you, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. And you know what? I continue to be amazing because we've carried it over from Wednesday, haven't we?
That's right. I mean, we got to talking about 3D printing on Wednesday, and we really had lined up a lot more topics than that. But hey, 3D printing turns out to be a deep deep thing to get into, and so most of our program was we used that as our example of how things have been amazing since in the lifetime of this program. So
that's right.
We have more to talk about.
Well, we absolutely do. We're counting down. This week, actually, we're celebrating our 500th show, and all this week we've been talking about why we do the show, and then we've been talking about how the future has been sort of happening before our eyes as we've been doing The World Transformed. And on Wednesday, we talked about the discovery of extrasolar planets and what that says about how scientific knowledge is progressing, and we talked about 3D printing and how it's come along. We got a couple other great examples that we're going to share tonight. And we'll get into, once again, Steve, I'm going to ask you, when necessary, put on the old buzzkill hat and, tell me to hold my horses if I'm getting too carried away with my enthusiasm about these, because I see tremendous progress over the lifetime of the show in some of these technologies. But I think what you're pushing back with is, well, yeah, but maybe the actual promise of some of these technologies has not yet been delivered on. So let's see where we are. And we've got two big examples, then we're going to talk about a few more, and then we're going to wrap it up by geeking out as we always do on Friday. But my first one is private space development. And let me just give you a quick timeline. Let me start before the show ever existed, and then two things that have happened since the show has existed. Okay, so in June 2004, Spaceship One conducted the first privately flown and landed manned space flight. So that happened roughly a year or so before we started ever doing a show. That kind of sets the bookmark there. Now, 4 years later, on September 28, 2008, SpaceX conducted the first successful launch of the Falcon 1 rocket. Okay, so in 4 years, we went from the first manned space flight to SpaceX actually kind of bringing a prototype product, not to market, but introducing an actual productized version of a private spaceship. It was the first privately developed liquid fuel rocket to reach orbit. Okay, so we hit orbit in 2008. Now, 4 years later, May 25th, 2012, the second mission of SpaceX's Dragon capsule completes a successful rendezvous and berthing with the International Space Station, making it the first private spacecraft to do so. And here we are 4 years beyond that. And what we've seen is continued testing of rockets. We've seen new players coming into the space. We've seen Bigelow and their idea for these inflatable space habitats. And I'm telling you, I think that, and I've got one more I'm saving. I think that what we have seen is really the birth of something that's going to be much bigger than the original space race, occurring kind of currently at a smaller scale, but poised to become much bigger. What do you think?
Yeah, what we're seeing is almost a repeat of what our government did in the 60s. At this point, we're seeing it repeated on the at the private level. You know, and first American in space, Alan Shepard, that was 1961. And then, but he didn't orbit the planet, right? It was suborbital flight.
That's right.
And followed, you know, within a short order, followed by orbital flights. I think, was it John Glenn, our first astronaut to be in an orbital flight?
That's right. And, of course, we should point out, Yuri Gagarin beat either of those guys into space and into orbit. But just for
that's sure. Right. Hey, but he didn't land his spaceship. we did learn that. He had to bail out, right?
That's true, yeah.
his capsule was a spectacular crash, and that was a secret for many, many years. But I'm really not trying to make light of that accomplishment at all.
Government level progress versus what's happening now. Sorry, I didn't
that's
mean to
right.
throw you off.
So we're seeing the same thing. We're seeing the same thing now privately, and to me, that's more exciting. This just brings it into the realm of, you know, one day, Phil, you know, you or I being able to buy a ticket, you know, I mean, and go visit the old Hilton or something, you know, or even further out. I want the world promised by 2001 Space Odyssey, where they're meeting at this space station. And the you know, very conversationally, well, are you going up or are you going down? You know, there's places to go out to go to, or you could go down to Earth, you know. I mean, they're just, it's just normal people. These are not even astronauts. That's the world, you know, that's what we want, right? So, it seems like we're closer to that now than because we're doing these things privately. And that's exciting.
It's really happening now. I think that you could look back at Spaceship One and say, oh, well, you know, that's just one of those technologies that hasn't really delivered on its promise yet. I mean, I don't know how much progress people expect to have occur in 12 years. And, you know, it's true that we went from, you know, as you pointed out, Alan Shepard to the moon in about 8 years back in the 60s. So, you know, the progress there was remarkable. But this is not just one push. This is this very organic process that's occurring with multiple players. And it's happening not on a top-down government-mandated schedule completely, but in part kind of an organic bottom-up schedule that's making it happen, which is why it's interesting when you see new players coming in. You know, we've now got well, obviously, Elon Musk talking about going to Mars. We've got a company that exists that plans to mine the asteroids. I mean, these are real things, right, that have happened since this show has started. And a headline that was one of the topics that you had shared for me for this week if we were just doing a grab bag, this headline, this private company just became the first to get an official green light to land on the moon. And needlessly, I think they add in the headline, and it could shape the future of space exploration. Oh, you think so? You think that might? Yeah, I think it definitely could. You know, for exactly the reason you just said. I mean, who goes to the moon, right? Well, at one time, no one had, right? And then the U.S. said we're going. And I just want to read this quote from Naveen Jain. He's one of the three co-founders of Moon Express, this private company that's now going to land its probe on the moon. He says, if we succeed, not only will we become the first private company to land on the moon, but the fourth superpower. He's saying his company now becomes the fourth superpower on Earth. If a small group of entrepreneurs can do something that only had been done by superpowers, that is a huge shift in what's possible. And boy, if anything sums up what this show is about, that's it right there. Okay. Not just this episode, but I mean what we've been doing over the last 500 plus shows. It's this shift in what's possible that he's referring to. And I think private space development is really a good example of that for that reason. We now have casually people talking about doing things that at one time only the biggest, most powerful governments in the world had done or could even think about doing or were failing to do in our lifetimes.
Right.
And now we're going to see, you know, some guys get together and send a probe to the moon. Very exciting, and I think it speaks to we're going to see a lot more on this over the next 500 shows.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. That's exciting. And you know, it's my way of thinking. These government programs back in the 60s were in their own way a false dawn. You know, we thought that was the space age. These incredible firsts took place during the late 50s and 60s and early 70s. But our compelling reason for being out there, we just never found. Okay, we're going now privately, and I think we're going to stay because there'll be compelling reasons to be there. We'll be able to make our living. You know, there's money to be made out there, and once we have a compelling reason there, we'll be there and permanently. And so that to me is exciting. And from the heroes that did these amazing first things back in the late 50s, 60s, and early 70s. But this to me is a more exciting time.
Well, nobody would be doing any of it if it weren't for them. But
yeah,
your point. Now there's a reason to keep doing it, and then the reason is, you know, to make money, to move on to the next thing. You know, to fulfill our destiny.
This new space race won't cost billions; it'll make billions.
That's the plan. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
That's and that is what you call a more sustainable model. Okay. Now let's move quickly on because we have several smaller topics we can cover, but I got one more big one that I think more than anything shows how much things have changed since we've been doing the World Transform. One of our favorite topics, and I'm proud to say that we were one of the first groups of people talking about this thing, and that is self-driving cars. Okay, let me take you back, Stephen. Let me take you back to the year 2004 when they did the first DARPA Grand Challenge. DARPA, put on this race, bring your autonomous vehicles, and we're going to run across, I don't know, like 160 miles of desert. None of the cars managed to finish the race. Okay, so 12 years ago.
And a few didn't get off the – there was a few cars that didn't get off the starting line. And
that's
kind of embarrassing. It's gone from that to basically, as Elon Musk characterized it, autonomous driving is a solved problem. He's come out and he's said that. It's what we have now are regulatory hurdles and continued refinement. That's is basically his position on autonomous driving now. So
yeah, I think that's true. If you swing it back to the year we started doing the podcast, they did the second Grand Challenge, and all but one completed. Okay, so that was huge progress in 1 year, right? From nobody could do it to all but one of the cars did it. But at that point, and you and I were pretty excited about it, and we were blogging about it, and mentioned it early on in the podcast. Hey, this self-driving car thing, this technology exists, and this is going to become a real thing. And that Musk can make a statement like that, and it's not viewed as nearly as outrageous as when he said he's going to Mars, right? Or that we live in a simulated universe, right? I mean, that is pretty close to something that he has proved, right? In the time since that second DARPA Grand Challenge, in the time that we've been doing the show, you see this huge awareness, growing awareness of this idea. The idea has really caught on. All the major car makers have announced plans to go to market with greater autonomy featured in their cars, if not outright autonomous vehicles. You know, Tesla actually came to market. They actually introduced cars with autonomous, or you might say semi-autonomous mode, late last year, right? October of last year, something like that. And what have we seen since then? Well, a couple of things, you know, two big ones that come to mind in that. First, and we just talked about this a few weeks ago, we've had the first fatality attributed to a self-driving car. There's like YouTube videos of people filming themselves not driving their cars and moving around in their cars. So, I mean, people are using this thing. And there was an accident. There was, the self-driving car didn't make a, perceptually didn't do something that a human might have been able to do. But we note the human driver didn't do it either. And and a driver was killed. But I've got a counterpoint to that one now, and this is just from this weekend. This headline is, man says Tesla autopilot saved his life by driving him to the hospital. So this guy had a pulmonary embolism while driving, and his Tesla takes over and gets him to the hospital. So, you know, the score is now even in terms of lives lost and lives.
Oh, and I'm going to tell you, it's going to go way out ahead. If you're going to be keeping score, it's going to go way out ahead for autonomous driving in short order. And the reason that I'm going to tell you, my profession, I'm a personal injury lawyer. I see all the ways that we goof up behind the wheel. Okay,
right.
It's just my job. I see it day in, day out. Truth is, we're just not that great at it. Okay,
yeah.
I think that human beings are just barely adequate enough to as drivers. We're too easily distracted. You know, if you get emotional, you get distracted, you get we have eyes that look in only one direction. We
right.
don't process so much. If we got other people in the car with us, if we're drunk, if we're sleepy, you name it. There's a million ways that we can be suboptimal for driving. And then there's just, you can be perfectly fine, 100% sober, not emotional or anything, and just miss something, you know. It's just, we're only human, right? So, these autonomous vehicles, while systems will no doubt make fatal errors, and there'll be deaths that you can attribute to these systems, real quick, they're going to be out in front of us. And that'll be a good thing. That'll be a good thing. No deaths, but also no meanings, no serious injuries. The injuries avoided and deaths avoided are going to be phenomenally, it's going to be a gift to humanity, what autonomous driving will bring to us.
Yeah, I think people will adopt it for the convenience, but the impetus to do it ultimately will be the safety, will be the lives saved by it. That will be the thing that tremendously enables the technology to take off. Because in spite of the fact that there's been one fatality attributed to it, you can't beat. I mean, a human can't beat a computer in terms of response time, in terms of looking in all directions, in terms of not being distractible. And you'll see it repeated 1,000 times a day, where the computer, where the self-driving car is going to make a better decision and respond better than a human driver would. We're just not designed to do it. And it is. It's just as simple as that. It's like us trying to drive a car will be like trying to do by hand what a laser printer can do. It's like, okay, you can do some nice stuff, but you'll never be able to do it. I'm sorry, what were you going
to
say?
Or going to a surgeon who refuses to use a microsurgery. He wants to cut you wide open to do the same thing. It'll be seen as, so antiquated that, why in the world? I can see in 10 years, some PSA, some government PSA, showing some kid, with the tears streaming down his cheeks, saying, I don't know if mom and dad loves me. Well, why is that? They still insist on driving.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. This is a technology I wouldn't even dare to presume to try to predict how widely adopted it will be in 10 years, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
10 years ago, after the DARPA Grand Challenge, when you and I were talking about this, did we have timelines that said commercial autonomous vehicles would be on the road in 10 years? I don't think we did. I don't think we thought that would be happening by then. I think if you'd told us when we did our first show talking about the DARPA Grand Challenge, if we'd told them, hey, you know what, guys, in 11 years you're going to do one where you talk about the first fatality and you talk about a guy getting his life saved because it's going to be so widespread and people are going to be sharing YouTube videos of themselves in their self-driving cars, we would have said, really?
Well, one thing I would have said is, what's a YouTube video?
Exactly.
I think you're right. I think probably toot my own horn a little bit, Phil. I think within the within a year of us talking about the Grand Challenge the first time, I was saying something like a decade to the first Martins. And again, it comes from the day job, just knowing how bad we are driving. It's just a push towards it. There's something else I wanted to bring up, and something we failed to mention all week. I wanted to. Moore's Law, although we may be getting to the end of it, of what it can do for us, and we'll be pushing into other ways that we compute to keep the ball rolling. But Moore's Law has delivered 26 times of improvement and per dollar for computation since 2005. In other words, wow. if I spend $2,000 today on a computer, I get one that's 26 times more powerful than one in 2005. You know, I recall those early DARPA vehicles for the Grand Challenge. I mean, they looked like they had computers strapped on all around them, just trying to find room in the car for the computer necessary to do this was it was a big deal trying to, you were basically, it's a good thing it was a driverless car. It wasn't working the brother.
Right.
You know, from all the computers that had to be put in the car. And now it's just, you can shrink all that down to pretty much a little dashboard computer and get all the computation you need. So,
yeah. I mean, you look at a self-driving car, you don't see this freak show vehicle with all these, gizmos sticking out of it. You just see a car, right?
That's right.
And that's Moore's Law in action. Well, actually, that gives us a good opportunity, Stephen. I think let's talk about a few of these others because we've talked about four big ones now over the last two shows. We talked about discovering planets, and we've talked about 3D printers. And we've talked about private space development and self-driving cars. But there've been a lot of other ones too. We can't spend the time on them, but When you talk about Moore's Law, that's one of the drivers behind, big steps forward. And, what are some of the other technologies that have really shown amazing progress over that period of time? One that I have to mention is artificial intelligence. And what have we seen happen over that period of time? Well, for one thing, neural networks, AI, has become a thing again. Right. It was we started the show. It was in a long period of doldrums, and it was kind of out.
If you were in a college program, wanting to enter that field, and you said that, hey, I'm interested in artificial intelligence, they probably identify you as a crackpot.
They would try to steer you in another direction. And those who didn't allow themselves to get steered are really cashing out because it's become huge, right? I mean, obviously, deep learning, machine learning has become, neural networks has become, the hot area in IT. What we've seen, not just in the last year when we've seen a deep learning algorithm, WinGo, which is bigger even than winning chess or bigger even than Watson winning Jeopardy, showing his real computational firepower that machine learning is starting to offer. But we also saw over that same period of time, we did see Watson win on Jeopardy, which is the big, the big AI demo that everybody saw and everyone is aware of. And just this headline I saw yesterday, Watson correctly diagnoses woman after doctors were stumped. And it just goes straight. We talked about how Watson, after winning on Jeopardy, went to med school. And that artificial intelligence software is now being used. Doctors are using it. And it's saving lives. Talk about it. Just like the self-driving car. This is an example of doctors were stumped. They were scratching their heads. This woman had leukemia. They couldn't figure out exactly what was happening with her. They put Watson on the case and identified that it was a much rarer form of leukemia, and they had missed some of the markers to it and have gotten her on a much more successful treatment path because Watson can see things, can do things that a human can't. It kind of takes you right back to the self-driving car. But that's one area that, we have seen unbelievable progress in over this period of time.
Well, we had a funny story of 6 months or so back, a teaching assistant for a AI program in a college. The teaching assistant was named Watson, right?
Yeah.
And the interaction with us was all online, and you email the teaching assistant. The teaching assistant would evaluate your ideas and give you suggestions and things like that. It was most of the semester had gone by before one of the students said, it's remarkable how fast the assistant Watson always gets back to me, even in the middle of the night. I mean, what's going on with, correctly surmised that the teaching assistant was an AI. To me, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You're getting something. You're getting close to something akin to a Turing test of success with that, and that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that most of the class was fooled. That somebody was smart enough to figure it out shows you that we're still not quite there. Because eventually we'll get to the point where it's like nobody will know. It's like I can't tell.
Well, I think name was part of the giveaway.
Probably so. Yeah.
Yeah.
But how about some other technology, Stephen? What else has changed radically over the past 11 years? Can you name any others?
Well, this 26 time improvement on computation per dollar time, right? We've capitalized on that as consumers in a lot of ways, right? One of the ways, it seemed like for years, Phil, if you wanted to go buy a computer, I mean, all the way back to the late 80s when I went to college, okay? If you wanted to buy a computer, you'd lay down $2,000 and get, a computer that was as good as they could make for $2,000 for that time. And it seems like I was always, when I went to a computer I used in college, when I was in grad school, I laid down $2,000 and got a much better computer. And that went on for years. You can still spend $2,000 to buy a computer today, but not a lot of people do. Not a lot of people do. Let me ask you this, Phil. The computer you're doing this program on right now, do you have a recollection as to what you spent?
About $600.
Yeah, yeah. It's a desktop kind of thing?
It is, and it was super powerful at the time I bought it a few years ago. Yeah, just the kind of top of the line.
And so one of the ways we have capitalized on it as consumers is we spend less, which is nice. Other ways that we have computers that are much more intimately tied to us. We've got our smartphones, which we didn't really have at the beginning of this program. I mean, there's some people that had Palm Pilots and things like that, but no one really, in hindsight, is not really the beginning of smartphones. We pretty much give that to Apple and their introduction of the iPhone as being the dawn of smartphones.
I'm sorry, Stephen. The term smartphone goes back to the 90s, right? I mean, you got to give BlackBerry and all them credit. What happened with Apple is truly making a computer in your hand, right? Taking the smartphone and introducing the app, and we don't want to undo.
No, not at all. No,
the smartphones that existed, they were there.
Yeah, and even the Palm Trio or whatever was a remarkable product, it seemed at the time. But we're at a different level now.
Here's an interesting calculation going forward. We should do a show about this. I wonder if we still spend the $2,000 we just divided up amongst various devices.
That's true. That's true. We might be spending as much per year as we ever did, but instead of just having one device, we have many.
Because I've got my laptop, I've got my desktop, I've got my iPhone, I've got my Kindle, I've got another laptop upstairs, we've got an iPad, I think my wife has her laptop. I think if we were to, add it all up, and of course it's over time, you don't buy them all at the same time or anything like that. I wonder if we're still spending about the same amount, getting tremendously more power and spread out over a lot more devices.
And we have then, as a result of this, something that's a lot it beats where we live a lot better than the machines we had in 2005. You know.
Yeah.
And I agree. We probably are spending it just as much because I'm doing the show here from a Chromebook, speaking into a smartphone right now, and sitting next to me is my iPad. Got computers all over the house. Some are ancient. My kids have one machine called their crap top. It's a laptop. It's very old, but you know it still serves as a function. And so you know they're not wanting to get rid of it. They've got their good machines too. So I mean, if you put it all together, probably we do. We'll probably spend as much as we ever did. But,
I bet we do. Well, you know, we could talk about lots more of these. I'll throw a few out here. We don't have time to get into them, but progress that's been made on virtual reality and augmented reality. And I know we were talking before the show, Stephen, that one of the areas that people complain we haven't made progress is augmented reality because we see a technology like Google Glass kind of come and go. But man, with the excitement that virtual reality has generated over the last couple of years, it's hard not to imagine that by our 1,000th episode, we won't be looking at a very different world where VR is concerned. That meat, solar energy, and robotics. And I'm just going to end with this one, life extension, because I found this link just while putting notes together for this show. And we haven't even talked about this yet, but Peter Thiel's name has been in the news around this one. Reversing aging, clinical trials for young to old blood transfusions begin. So we're seeing, the real dawn of people being treated for aging, people trying interesting treatments for life extension, something that you predicted would be happening by about this year, and actually by last year, and I think by last year it had started. What we're now seeing is lots more examples of it, and we're going to be seeing lots more of it to come in over the next 500 shows, I have a feeling.
Yeah, it was about 2005 when I put about a 12-year prediction on the beginnings of this. And I remember some of the comments. The one that I remember the most as far as a negative comment was, well, this is just hopelessly naive. The product life cycle, even if, the technology was in place, to roll out a product would take longer than this.
Right.
My response was, we'll see. I just think that it won't take that long. once something as earth-changing and as valuable humanity as this becomes possible and is put in front of people as a possibility, very smart people will spend, will put an amazing amount of effort into something like this. And it'll happen sooner than people expect.
And this finally is why to bring it to other geek. It's really not other geek. It's geek front and center. This is the reason why the future belongs to geeks, right? If you look at stories like this unfolding, who's going to take advantage of the clinical trials for young to old blood transfusion? You know who's going to take advantage of that? A geek, right? I mean, Peter Thiel is one of the people being listening to.
The geek will be the first, but I'm going to tell you that everybody else will follow right along behind.
Oh, sure. They will. They will. Yeah. And I mean, he's a rich geek too. So, you might want to bring that into it as well. But for every one of these technologies, who are the people who are going to, cash in on developing space or having a self-driving car or curing diseases with artificial intelligence or any of it, right? It's people who are already looking forward. It's people who are already just immersed in the technology, who are already spending time thinking about these things and who are going to, take it to the next step. So I think if you go back to our Monday show and say, why do we do this? Well, yeah, we do it because we're geeks, and we do it because that's where the future is. You know what? If you want to know what the future is going to be like, let me sum it up for you in one word, Stephen. Geeky, right?
True. Yeah, that's true.
And let me add a word: awesome, right? Amazing. I think that's it in a nutshell. That's what we've done over 500 shows, and that's what we're going to do over the next 500. We've gone past our time as we so often do on Fridays, but hey, this has been fun, Stephen. And I didn't mean to cut you off there. If you had something else to say on
no, that's
any of these.
And at this point, I'm going to drop the mic and walk away. So
yeah, we've made our point. Time to drop the mic, which you couldn't do back when we started the show. And I'll tell you what we'll do, though, is we'll pick it up with three new shows next week as we continue to explore the future. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.